Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. The problems with codeine, these 15 medicines available over the counter in your pharmacy have codeine. And as we heard yesterday, a number of people become addicted. Caroline, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. What was your journey, so to speak, Caroline? How did you get involved with codeine, so to speak, over the counter tablets?
Well, I suppose about 12 to 15 years ago, really, was when I started taking them for a kind of a daily headache, severe enough headache. And somebody just said to me, look, there's a new great painkiller out called Nurofen Plus, give it a go. And I did. And of course, it got rid of the headaches, but it also gave me a kind of a feeling of euphoria, energized, or it calmed me when I was in a very stressful job, and it would calm me down. And I suppose I didn't realize when I started taking it that it was addictive, but you know, when something has been sold over the counter, you don't really think of it in those terms. But really, looking back now, I realise I was self-medicating, you know, and just it was a coping mechanism for me, really, a life coping mechanism. Before I realised it, I was addicted to it. And I was eventually taking more and more and increased the dose to about, I would take 3 codeine 4 times a day. And I did that for years and years. And obviously did probably untold damage to my body, you know.
And you were just taking them.
I would just take them as part of my daily routine, whether I needed them or not. I became dependent on them. Like, don't forget, there's no outward signs of abuse of this medication. So it's a very secretive addiction, you know. Like, I was cutting myself and I was cutting everyone around me, you know, and unintentionally, you know, it just gets a grip on you, you know. And I just became so used to taking it, I just couldn't imagine. I was afraid not to take it, you know. So,
and where were you? And I knew, like, because we know that the list, I won't keep going into the list, but the list is Nurofen Plus, Solpadine, Maxidine. There's a list, everyone knows them, but you are given warnings when you're buying them over the counter in a chemist.
Well, initially. Initially there was no warnings. You could just go in and get them.
Okay.
And there was no warnings whatsoever. But by the time the regulations and the warnings did come in, you know, hundreds of thousands of people all over this country were already addicted to them. And, you know, you just become ruthless about getting it, and you just travel to get them. Once you wear out your welcome in your local pharmacies, you know, you'll get in your car and you'll, like, because I tried to get off them on my own by going cold turkey several times.
Okay.
And it's horrific. Like, the come down is absolutely horrific. It's like the worst flu you can possibly imagine. And then nighttime, you can't sleep with, obviously, chronic restless legs, sweating. You know, it's really, really difficult, you know, to come off them. And then I start Googling, how do I get off these things? And, you know, there are medications. Suboxone is called. I didn't want to, like, replace one addiction for another. So, you know, I'd end up going back on it. So I had about 5 attempts over the years, which were fruitless. And then eventually what happened for me was I told somebody close to me about it. And with their support and help, I gradually, slowly but surely, reduced the dosage until I became completely, completely up. But I knew a lot of people, Joe. When I say a lot of people, many, many people who are taking codeine. I remember going to the hairdressers one day and taking 3, and the hairdresser noticing and saying to me, every person working in this salon is on them, you know, not just takes them, but is on them, you know. Yeah. So, you know, and it's just secretive.
Did you say you were taking it 4 times a day?
Yeah, 3-4 times a day.
3-4 times a day.
So before I even got out of bed in the morning, I would take 3 just to start the day. This was when I was in the height of my addiction, you know. And like, so, I wasn't happy doing that. It was an awful, shameful feeling. And you know, and that's why it's secretive, because who wants to tell anybody that you're doing that when outwardly you appear like a normal person?
So what prompted you? What was the straw or whatever that broke the camel's back? I know you tried to give them up a few times yourself. But on each occasion, what was it that prompted you to give them up, to try and give them up?
To try and give them up was I started to get a bit of sense, I suppose, in my old age, and I started to Google what this was doing to my body.
Okay.
And that's kind of, you know, like I would go, I remember going for some facial, you know, Botox or something like that, and not being able to get it because I was told I bruised too easily.
Ah.
And that if I, you know, if I was ever in a car accident, I would bleed out. Because this thins your blood, you know, and things like that started to scare me. And I just said, look, it's now or never. I have to do something. And so I was one of the lucky ones, you know, I was able to just, with the help and support of my family, I was able to knock it on the head and replace it with a healthier addiction. So.
And how long did it take you to come down off codeine?
It took me a couple of attempts to even do it that way, Joe. That's how hard it is. And I'd say over a period of 6 to 8 months before you're completely rid of it and it's out of your body and that you stop getting side effects, restless legs being the one that goes last, you know. So at night in bed, it's hard. So that's my story with it.
And Caroline, did you do it without any talk therapy? Like, there was a reason you were taking them, or you're saying that the reason I was taking them was because the buzz I got out of it. I was so busy. I was running around the place.
Yeah, well, I mean, I spoke, there's one member of my family in particular, and I spoke to that person about it a lot, and on a daily basis, I'm struggling today, and I really feel like buying a packet, you know, and they say, don't, come on, you can do it. You know, it was actually my daughter who helped me through it, my adult daughter.
Great.
I don't know. I'd say I'd still be on them today, only for her, you know. And
have you checked has any physical damage manifest?
Well, I've since had like an MRI and a CT scan, and thank God I'm fine. Like, there's no damage done. I've had blood tests done. You know, there's no damage done. But I'm just one of the lucky ones. I do know someone who died of an overdose of codeine in her kitchen. She took 24 one morning and died.
Good God. And were you ever refused? Were you ever chastised? Were you ever warned in a pharmacy about the addictive nature of codeine in these tablets?
Look, at some pharmacies you can walk into them today and they won't ask you any questions. And some pharmacies you go in and you'll get grilled.
Yeah.
And you have to have a spate of excuses as to why you need them for one thing or another. And, you know, I feel like it's very unfair on the pharmacies that they have to go through this with everybody who asks for Nurofen.
But you would have your answers ready.
Of course, absolutely, you would have your answers ready with your strep throat or your, you know, your toothache and the dentist isn't open till tomorrow, or, you know, you've no appointment. And it's awful. It's embarrassing and it's awful. But, you know, that's the rootlessness of it. And, you know, the addictive nature of this medication, like, this is why it's banned in all European countries and Australia and, you know, not everywhere, but nearly everywhere.
Well, it's prescription only in Australia. That's the...
It is. Yeah. And in Spain...
Yeah, we are very high users of it, of codeine-based products, over the counter.
Very high.
When I mentioned to a number of people yesterday, prescription, they said that immediately puts up the price. People will get them somewhere. Obviously, you have to go to a medic to get a prescription. Have you any ideas of how this might be controlled? Apart from education, price, obviously.
Yeah, well, regarding the price, I mean, what price can you put on a person's life? You know, this medication is killing people. You know, it's also
regarded, including a medic told us yesterday, that it is a very good analgesic. Now, obviously, in severe moderation.
Well, the fact is,
it is legal.
Yeah.
And I think it is manufactured in Ireland.
I know, and they're making an absolute fortune on it at the cost of people's, you know, mental health. Like, the fact of the matter is there's an awful lot of people with mental health issues in this country and with addictive personalities, you know, and it's just too readily available for them. And, you know, I think it should be on prescription. I think there's a reason why it's on prescription in so many countries.
Yeah.
It's because it's just so dangerous. And it's not unless you've been through it yourself that you'd really realise how dangerous it is and how easy it is and how it can progress then to other addictions, you know, like when it no longer serves its purpose, people will go on to something stronger. And
that's the worry.
I was just lucky that didn't happen to me. But I mean, there should be a national helpline, or, you know, there should be somewhere for people to turn to.
Well, yesterday we were told, I don't have in front of me, but yesterday we were told there's poisons.ie. is a helpline. Mm. But now that was in relation to another medical item we were doing.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah.
There should be like a bigger warning on the packet. You know, there should be a helpline. There should be somewhere for.
Well, there was a number suggested 1 year PPS number. Mm. But again, there's no central database. Not even in our hospitals is there a central database. So how you would connect pharmacists, I do not know. Someone else made a simple suggestion, just fill out a form, a short form even, to give your details. So I don't know what the solution is. Stay there, Caroline. Maybe people listening to stories like yourself, Caroline, are the solution. Mary, Joe at rt.ie, 51551. Mary, good afternoon. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Joe.
Good. Mary, what was your drug that you became addicted to?
My drug that I became addicted to was gabapentin. Okay. 3 years ago, Joe, I had back surgery, and it was put on gabapentin and took it for a few months. Didn't agree with me that well, but anyway, I took it as I was told to, and then I went off it. And when I did, I absolutely crashed. I just slowly went downhill, went to my doctor. She'd done bloods, tried everything, thought it was my thyroid, thought it was lots of things, couldn't find anything. I continued, and eventually it went to the state that I just couldn't eat, I couldn't breathe. I was really in a bad state, and I was admitted to hospital. I had all the tests done in the hospital, which were very good. They told me there was no red flags, just I was in full cold turkey withdrawal. Okay. And then unfortunately, they told me I have to go back on it to stabilise my body. And then when they put me back on it, sent me home with a weaning, a timeline to wean off it. And when it came to the end of weaning off it, it was just so, so hard. My GP recommended medical supervision. I was taken into hospital for 3 weeks to take me off it. I was never on medication for anything before this, and it was just a life-changing experience. I was just, you know, it's 3 years ago now, and I'm still having burning and side effects from it. I was told the healing is very, very slow. I will get there. I am improving, but it's just, I think this drug is, I know there was some talk about making a control drug, and it's used by people, but I just think it is addictive. I got totally addicted to it. I was never on medication in my life before that. I was healthy. You know, I was exercising. It just floored me. And it's just to be aware, this can happen. Maybe not to everyone, but it is happening to people. And now,
were you warned, Mary, that this could be?
No, I wasn't. I was told when I was discharged that, look, people ring in the hospital here with back pain are usually not taking their medication. Make sure you take it, and make sure you don't leave a day between prescriptions, that your prescription is ready to go when you run out.
Even missing a day would be problematic.
Yeah, and I thought about that later. Why that was so? That was emphasised
so
not
stringently.
To miss a day.
Yeah,
so stringently. And I just thought, no, you know, there's something. But probably being naive, I should have looked up more. I just done what I was told. I really thought that no drug could do what this has done to me. And it's been a really, I suppose, a learning curve that you would think just to make people aware what can happen. I know people that's on the drug and are slowly trying to come off it and finding it very, very difficult. Like my GP was very good. She just said, look, if I was older, a lot older, she wouldn't put me through coming off it. I'd probably have to stay on it. But I was too young to stay on it and I'd have to just wean and come off it. And I did. I'm not on it anymore. But I'm still suffering some of the side effects. And it's been a really, really tough 3 years now.
And Mary, the treatment, the condition it was treating, when
it
you finished...
It was nerve pain.
Okay, but when you finished on it, on the gabapentin, did the condition come back? Did the symptoms come back?
The symptoms from withdrawal, you really, I suppose, I didn't eat, I didn't sleep, I was lost weight, I was... Your cognitive ability, your memory, your weight, everything was affected. My consultant said it's like your whole receptors. It interferes. It is for epilepsy convulsions. That's what it was patented for. It's been given off label for nerve pain, but it just my whole. I suppose your way. You have to retrain your brain to deal with everything, your receptors, everything has been interfered with. Mm-hmm. And it's been really a shocking experience and something that you think, you know, this is not real, this couldn't be happening, you know. But it is real and it did happen. And my GP was very good. She said, it is real. You just have to embrace each day. Mm-hmm. And also she said, the healing, it won't be by the day, by the week. You'll have to do it in chunks, every 3 months, every 6 months, every year, you'll see yourself. It's very, very slow. And they were right. I didn't believe it could be so slow, but it is. And I'm still not 100%. I have energy dips, burning, but this is 100% damage from the drug. And I have no doubt in my mind that it's anything else. It is 100%. Damage from the drug, and it's just to make people aware that, and maybe doctors not to hand it out so easy as the first resort. Maybe to try something else first, or you know, make people aware.
I'm going to a report by Mary Carlin, so it's a court report from the Irish Times in 2023. Coroner calls for prescription medication, nicknamed coffin tablets, to be reclassified as controlled drug. Now, concerns were raised over potential use of pregabalin, which is a sister drug, apparently, of gabapentin, which is licensed drug, for treating epilepsy, nerve pain and anxiety, being sold on the streets for a euro a tablet.
That's
and
right.
Then the Health Products Regulatory Authority, the HPRA, they then issued a statement saying gabapentin and pregabalin, which were expanded warnings. They issued expanded warnings regarding the symptoms for abuse, dependence and withdrawal. It says gabapentin and pregabalin are authorised in Ireland for neuropathic pain in adults, specific forms of epilepsy and anxiety disorder, generalised anxiety disorder. They say drug dependence, including, may occur at therapeutic doses. This is basic doses. You could become dependent.
Basic doses. Yeah, I do agree. I think I've talked to people. I've met. I've looked into this quite a bit, and you can become addicted to this. I mean, I wasn't abusing it. I was just on following the prescribed medication that was given to me, and you can 100% become addicted to it. I have no doubt in my mind. I've never had dealings with medication. I was never on anything, but this has definitely changed my life. I've been, I went cold turkey. It was just it just affected my life really badly.
Mary, use that phrase cold turkey. How do you know it was cold turkey, if you don't mind me?
They told me admitted in, he said, you're actually, I left it, I left it a while because you don't know what's wrong. Yeah, you say, well, I've had back surgery. I'm out walking. I'm doing my exercises. You know, nobody could say, well, what is wrong? She's really not, you know, she's going downhill a bit. I mean, the support of family is important and friends. And you just say, you know, keep going. You get there. But I wasn't. I was actually getting worse all the time. And when I was brought into hospital, he said to me in the A&E, he just said, is this like a train trucking through your body, sending off sparks and heat, and you just can't breathe? And I said, exactly. Wow. He said, well, you're just in full withdrawal, he said, from gabapentin. And he said, that's what it's done to you. And it's like, you know, something.
But
that
I presume there's arguments that gabapentin and its sister pregabalin are effective for many people in terms of neuropathic pain.
I've spoke to my GP, and it is prescribed for people, and it is effective.
But you don't think the warnings are strong enough?
No.
Okay. Stay with us, Mary and Caroline. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Mary Dolan is in Leitrim. Mary.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. Your comment, please.
Well, I was born and raised in the States, in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
As a teenager, I know that there was a particular cough medicine that had codeine in it, and it was available over the counter. A lot of people in my age crowd, used to drink it to get high.
Okay.
And unfortunately, it really, in today's terms, was a gateway drug, because any drug pushers around would say, well, I have something even better for you. And eventually, I know at least three people who died because they had gone on to heroin. So long story short, about at least 30 to 40 years ago in the States, anything with codeine, headache relief, cough syrup, that sort of thing, had to be by prescription only. And I am surprised that Ireland hasn't joined that. I was very surprised when I moved here nearly 30 years ago.
Well, looking at the OxyContin scandal.
Yes, I know.
Sackler saga. People would maybe have the opinion of the perception that it's easier to get very strong and addictive drugs in the United States if you watch Dopesick, for example, with Michael Keaton.
Absolutely. It's really outrageous that this has been allowed to happen. It's a quick fix that has long-term devastating effects on people. So I'm very sorry that
happened. You say I'm shocked at the availability over the counter in Ireland.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I am.
Lisa, stay because there. I'll come back to you in a sec, Mary. Mary's in Leitrim. Lisa's in Dublin. Lisa, your point, please.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I suppose, long story short, Joe, I began to take salpidine almost 22 years in March, actually.
Mm-hmm.
When I had my youngest child, came home from hospital, took them for backache. There was no codeine addiction warning or anything like that back then. Because if it was the same instruction on it, I certainly wouldn't have taken it. But anyway, here I am nearly 22 years later and still taking 8 every day of the week.
Oh, good God.
I spoke to my GP about it. They referred me to a hospital with a methadone program. So to stop that, and it's specifically for the use of codeine painkillers. So, of course, you hear the word methadone and you kind of don't want to associate yourself with, oh, God, you know.
Methadone is normally used for heroin users,
Yeah, you know, it's some unfortunate who has a really, really bad addiction.
Yeah.
And then there's the realisation that, you know, it's just a different name. I'm the same person, really. It's a drug addiction, do you know?
And how does well how rough. Does how does it affect if you try and stop taking the 8 Sarpedine a day, what is the effect?
I did it for a month.
Okay.
So, a month. And I didn't cut it down much as afterwards my doctor told me the way to do it is to slowly, very, very slowly decrease. He said it takes about 6 to 8 months to decrease properly from that amount. Where I didn't, I just cut it. And Joe, I was ashamed of the symptoms I got. My body, my hands were shaking, my body. I had a foggy brain. I felt a weakness as if I hadn't eaten in a year. Horrific. Nightmares, sweating. It was horrendous. And I went back on them. And so here I am still,
and
waiting on the waiting list.
And the cost of them, it's €14 a packet of Sarpedine, I'm told.
€18 in
Oh, is it? Sorry, well then, okay, well then, well tell me, many packets are you going through a week?
Well, I'd get, what, 8 a day, so 3 days.
56.
Out of, yeah. And then another, we're into another 8, so,
so
do you know what, that's 64.
Well, at least €40 a week.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you said, well, again, what would happen if you stopped?
Well, when I stopped, Joe, I genuinely, I wouldn't stop again the way I did that way anyway. I would hope that at some point I get off them, but I wouldn't go through that again. That was worse than I've had 3 kids.
What was worse? Explain it to me. What was worse?
The symptoms, they're so frightening, Joe.
The withdrawal symptoms.
Really, really terrifying symptoms. Your hands trembling, your heart racing, like a panic attack, perpetual panic attack. For anyone who's ever suffered one or felt anything like that, overwhelming sense of anxiety. Almost like you're not in control of your own body. It's horrible, horrible weakness, a fatigue. But your mind is racing, but your body is slowing down. Sweating, like profusely sweating.
Mm-hmm.
And the realization of it, actually, the emotional turmoil of it affected me more than the physical, because the physical symptoms of trying to come off it made me realize that I was addicted to it, do you know?
Yeah.
And it was embarrassing. It really was embarrassing.
And then have you had your liver checked? Or?
Well, I've had, luckily, I've had bloods done and liver checks and all that, and I'm lucky so far.
Yeah.
I haven't had damage, but I've been warned, very seriously warned, by my own GP and another GP that will, you know.
So why
eventually.
Well, this sounds hard. Why won't you heed the warnings, Lisa?
That's the power of the addiction, isn't it, Joe?
But lots of people who are addicted to alcohol or drugs do actually, well, a lot of the time with help, some without help, get off them.
Oh, they do. They do. You know, there's hope for recovery. I believe in any addiction, you know, no matter how serious it is. But I do.
Does your family know?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, even with my kids, I have 3 adult kids, and they'd be very watchful and a constant, you know, you need to stop taking them. They cannot be good for you. And if that was us taking them.
Well, do you find yourself taking them secretly? In other words, you put them in. You put them in a coffee cup that doesn't show the fizz or.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And. That's, Joe, do you know, anyone who takes them will know the sensation. And I'm not exaggerating, Joe. I really am not exaggerating. When someone who's addicted to Sulfadine finally gets them, there's like a hit from it when you drink it. It's like a high.
Okay.
And
it's
so dangerous.
Mary, does what Lisa's saying there about the withdrawal symptoms is... Does that anyway compare to your horror story when you tried to come off gabapentin?
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. I sympathise with her. It's horrendous. It's one of the worst feelings ever. And also the shame. I was offered naloxone. I didn't want to take it. You associate that with I suppose, drugs, heroin addicts, and I was given that to take twice, and it didn't agree with my stomach, and it is, I suppose, a mask. But you feel, what have I done wrong? And like, I didn't look for these, they were given to me, and I just feel the warnings weren't there. I wasn't pre-warned about the damage these drugs could do. And the withdrawal effects the lady there is describing is absolutely horrendous. I totally agree with everything she's saying.
Niamh is on the line. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 text. Niamh, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Codeine again. Is it over-the-counter medicine?
Yeah, Nurofen Plus. When I was at my worst, I was taking 3 packs of 24 a day, so I was taking 72 tablets. I'd taken 24 just to get out of the bed in the morning, 24 in the afternoon, 24 in the evening. I had gone to the state that none of the pharmacists in my town would serve me, so I was going out of town, driving around to see where I could get it. I stopped paying my mortgage, stopped paying my bills. I had gone from, the buzz was gone, there was no buzz anymore. This was just literally to stop the withdrawals, to get me through the day, to just be able to survive, to mind my kids, look after my house. The withdrawals, there's something I can never describe, the pains that I went through. I ended up going into to rehab in Kilmore in Cork to try and get off them. I've been on a methadone program now for the last 8 years, and that methadone has saved my life, because I was getting to the stage that I was going looking for something else, because I just couldn't get through the day anymore, and I couldn't get Nurofen Plus. So I don't think people realise the dangers when they go into the chemist.
But when did the straw break? When did you realise, I need treatment, I need help?
I knew for a long time I needed help. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. I went to my GP and he put me on medication called DF118, which was another codeine-based medication to come off the Nurofen, but I ended up abusing them as well. I couldn't do it on my own. I tried to do it on my own for so long without. I tried to hide it from everybody, but it was gone to the stage that I was nearly dead. I went into renal failure. I damaged my kidneys. They went down to 19%. I was killing myself slowly. Didn't realise I was doing it, because you don't see it from the outside. It's just inside my body was dying.
Oh, that's frightening, beyond belief. And when you were, where were you getting the 72 Nurofen Plus a day?
Where were you getting? Different chemists. I'd start off in the morning, and I had a good job. I was earning good money. It's a good job, because if not, I wouldn't have been able. I would be dead.
It's
now.
Not cheap,
I'd be absolutely dead. No.
And what, you go from chemist to chemist?
Yeah. I'd have to have a packet for myself to get up in the morning, so I knew before I went home from work in the evening I'd have to have a packet ready for the morning.
Say you went home in the evening and you couldn't find a packet.
Oh, I'd be shook. I'd be irritable. I'd be like stuck to the bed. I just can't function.
So you'd go out and get a packet.
A horrible life. I'd have to.
And who knew? Too. Who around you knew?
Nobody until I actually attempted suicide, and it was only then that people discovered what was going on. I let people in then.
Yeah.
I couldn't live, and I couldn't continue the way I was going, Joe. I couldn't live like that anymore. Life was just, it was horrible. It's a horrible addiction.
Okay, stay with us. More people will join you after this break. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. In one sense, we are, the wrong word used to people with alcohol addiction, but Irene was in rehab for alcohol addiction, and you were struck by the number of people addicted to codeine, to these over-the-counter tablets, who were in rehab as well, Irene.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I also worked for 22 years in pharmacy.
Okay.
So I left pharmacy to go into... now, thankfully, I wasn't addicted to any of these over-the-counter products.
Okay.
My thing was just alcohol. I was getting far too fond of it. And, I was taking a drink every night. It didn't mean that I was drunk every night, but I was just... too fond of it. And as I was getting older, I'm 52, and I thought, no, sorry, like, this is not right. My ex-husband, well, I was separated, but he died from directly from alcohol related problems. So he had a terrible fall, and it frightened the life out of me. You know, he literally died with such massive head injury and on concrete. So I just thought, no, like, sorry, but, you know, getting older and stress. So, yeah, I went in for 8 months to an amazing place, not going to tell you anything about the name or blah, blah, blah. Mm. And I met some lovely people, not many because it was a small place. And I did 8 months and it was tough. But also, you know, we got friendly and you get close to people, you're living right beside. So it's a women's only, by the way. So this particular couple of people, and I said, you know, explain, because I knew all about codeine addiction. And as I think there was a doctor you had on yesterday, I happened to be listening. And I think there was a doctor that said something like, it's not the codeine per se on its own. If it was alone, it's not going to kill you. Well, I mean, I'm sure it does. I mean, I'm not a pharmacist. I worked there as an over-the-counter, but worked very closely, and I heard, I loved learning, and I used to listen to everything they said, basically. So it's what it goes with in this country. So paracetamol or ibuprofen. So Neurontin plus is the ibuprofen one, the stronger codeine, and then the salt insoluble, which is like, anyway, to get to the point, a couple of girls were saying they chewed them like pastilles, fruit pastilles. I was going, what? Did you not know? Like, did you not realise that this stuff is serious? And they were like, didn't care. Along with maybe an alcohol addiction and cocaine or whatever, crack cocaine, all this stuff. And I was mesmerised and I was like, is that why your stomach, one of the girls, I'm 52, so she's a bit younger. I said, is that why your stomach is like, now we were close enough at the stage, we'd have a giggle about it. Her stomach was huge. She said, that's never going to go. It's never, the doctor told her it'll never get better because she'd leaves and she'd call complications, yeah.
Okay, stay there, Aaron, because I also want to ask you about your time behind the counter in the pharmacy. But I want to bring in Jason for a sec. Jason, good afternoon. Codeine again. You were addicted for how long?
10 years.
And you're off for 10 years, which is really important to say in the same breath. How did you one start, and above all, how did you manage to get help?
Went into the pharmacy. I'd done it myself.
But how did you start?
I went in for back pain.
Okay.
And they recommended sulfadine, and I'd never taken them before, and then when I took them, it was like euphoria, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like you were constantly chasing that euphoric sensation. And you were just taking more and more and more and more and more.
And how quickly did you need more and more and more?
After 2 boxes.
That's incredibly quick.
Yeah. After 48, I was like, and then I was constantly going, chemists were refusing me and saying, no, you're taking way too much. And I drove the country to get.
Did you? Have we ever stopped? You drove the country because you were being asked who are these for, and
yeah.
So 10 years. Yeah. How did you pay for that, by the way?
It's
not cheap, you know. Okay, so how did you stop?
I just went cold turkey.
Yeah,
you know, and comments from family as well, like, Jesus Christ, look at the boxes, are all over the place. What are you doing? You know.
So it was comments from the family about the boxes rather than your state.
But I didn't care. I basically, I was giving them the French Connection UK, if you want to put it that way, you know.
Yeah. That's what you're telling them to do, yeah. You mentioned earlier, how did you stop?
I just mentally, I had to get it into my head. Look, you're destroying yourself. You're And actually, I collapsed one day and I ended up in Balmount.
Yeah.
And I was in Balmount for 3 weeks. And the neurological department said to me, "You're turning your brain to mush." So.
With the codeine?
Yeah, yeah.
And what was cold turkey like?
Oh, my Jesus. Don't talk to me. Curled up in a ball, plonking out of the bed, And shakes and shivers and, it was horrible, absolutely horrible. But, there comes a point where, you're going to have to do it. Like, to me, I see heroin addicts and I go, Jesus, if I could only help them, if I could only, tell them you will get through it, but it's hard, very hard.
But you got through it on your own.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's incredible. And how are you doing now, Jason?
Great. Unbelievable.
Good lad. Good lad.
Yeah, yeah.
The argument yesterday and still there today, codeine, these over-the-counter medicines, there's 12, 15 of them actually, that you can buy over-the-counter that have codeine in it, that they should be in some way made harder to get. Have you any ideas on how you'd make them harder?
Prescription only.
Yeah, but that means unless you have a medical card, that means you have to go and pay a doctor.
Yeah, but then that's going to distract you, isn't it? It's going to stop you from paying. It's like you to visit the doctor and the doctor denying your prescription. You're going to have to end up going, right, well, there's only one way out of this, is not to take them anymore.
Yeah.
And suffer the consequences while you're doing it.
And that would, is there an easier way? Would there then develop, Jason, a black market for salpidine or whatever?
No, but come here, I remember you used to be able to buy them in Spain and Tenerife and everything like that, right? And they took them off the shelves completely. So you can't buy them in Spain, you can't buy them in Tenerife, you can't buy them in wherever, right? And when I was going to those countries or those, areas where I knew I couldn't get them, I had the suitcase loaded with them.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
You go prepared.
Oh, yeah, completely, completely. And have them taken out of the boxes and, stuffed into the legs of jeans and whatever, rolled up completely. And then when you got there, the minute you got there, you were like, okay, right, unload. And,
And plan how many you'd need every day. Or
yeah, how many you'd need every day for the duration.
So what would you say? Now you became addicted very quickly. What would you say to people who are using a box a day or whatever, or 12 a day? What would you say to them? First thing they'd say, it's not doing me any harm, Jason. That's what they'd say.
No, it's going to escalate.
Okay.
It goes from 2 to 4 to 6 to 8 to 10 to 12 and there comes a point then where you never have enough.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah.
It's just, it's like a person, as we said, on heroin. They need it. They can't do without it. And your body, with codeine, your body, it accepts it very quickly. Mm-hmm. And then when you go, all right, and you're taking them having a cup of tea or...
Yeah. Well, is it that, I mentioned alcohol earlier on and Irene, who was in rehab for alcohol, but compared to alcohol, addiction to codeine is... what was it?
100 times.
Well, the treatment figures for 2023, opiates, including codeine, salpidol and salpidine, 538. Alcohol, 8,138 treatments.
Yeah.
in a 2019-2020 survey of 70,000, there was an estimate 70,000 use opioid pain relievers in a non-medical way in the previous 12 months, but there are 578,000 users of alcohol who have an alcohol use disorder. So is that why it hasn't got the attention? It's because alcohol is such a problem in this country, comparatively. No, now, that doesn't negate it, says you.
No, it doesn't negate it. And alcohol, right, there's a wider community there that take care of that. There's loads of centres you can go to, AA.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't go, Solfedine Addiction Centre or...
I know what you mean.
Or Codeine Addiction Centre. It doesn't have the
same...
You know, like,
well, the reason it doesn't have the same profile is it doesn't have the same numbers by a long shot, but that in itself...
It doesn't have the same numbers because it's a hidden addiction.
Stay with us if you can. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, apparently all rehab centres do accept people with codeine addiction, and that's where the figures come from. Neve, to come back to you, you were on, I hate even saying these figures, 72 a day. What was the treatment in the treatment centre you went into, Niamh?
So firstly, I had to detox. So it was a separate part of the treatment centre. So I detoxed for a week, and then it was a 9-month programme. Again, a lot of counselling, a lot of work that you do on yourself. And, you know, everyone was like, you know, something had to have happened in your past. And, you know, why were you taking them? But it was it was because I enjoyed the feeling that it gave me. There was no other reason for it.
Yeah. And then, well, was it hard? Did they have to work hard? Did you have to work very hard?
Extremely hard, yeah. Extremely hard.
And what was the pathway like? Was it stony? Did you think of turning back at any stage?
Loads of times, yeah. Loads of times. And when I came home then, trying to put my family back together again. When you become an addict, you become not a very nice person. I didn't like the person I had become, the lies I was telling, the things I was doing. Yeah. A lot of guilt, a lot of shame. You just become not a nice person.
And Lisa is still there. Lisa, would you ever think of, well, you say you put your name down for the clinic in Beaumont, and I presume for any addiction clinic, it doesn't matter what you're addicted to, they will treat me. Have you any idea what the regime is like, Lisa, given that you put your name down for it in Beaumont?
I got a little bit of information, Joe, about it, that it's basically methadone kind of substitute. I backpedaled away from it immediately when they said that word initially, because, well, I suppose the audacity of me to judge anyone with addiction when I'm addicted. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
If I'm honest, I don't know, Joe. I wondered just today, talking to you, when if you're stopped at a Garda checkpoint and breathalyzed, is it checked for codeine?
Yeah, it is. It's a drug. There is a drug test now. Yes, they call it drug driving and drink driving. So there are tests. Absolutely.
They mustn't test for. I mean, I've been breathalyzed several times. Sometimes. Literally just after I'd taken Solfedine. If I'm honest, Joe, if I'm completely honest, I think that Solfedine overuse would impair driving or the lack of Solfedine, because I have driven. I mean, I remember I was in Donegal on a holiday, Joe, and I forgot to bring Solfedine and I couldn't get them up in Donegal. And I got up and got back into the car and drove back down. Wow. Imagine.
Until you
just
could,
to get self in and go back
up. Until
you
find somewhere,
Yeah.
Let me bring it. Okay, Gabriel O'Farrell. Gabriel, what happened to you, Gabriel? You're in back pain. Well, look. Your back pain.
Yeah, listen, it was back pain, and it was bad enough that the Nurofen wasn't doing quite the job as I thought it would. So I said, I'll take the Nurofen plus. Now, look, I mean, codeine, I wasn't too much aware of that. But shortly after, I was in a cinema one day with my wife, and I sat there, and at the end of the film, I said, Jesus Christ, I said, I actually don't really feel as if I'm quite with it here, you know?
Yeah.
Now, look, I wasn't staggering around. I wasn't blowing my words. But it was enough to say, and about 2 days later, I said, you know, I was saying, it's got to be something. Put it down to the Nurofen Plus. Stopped taking the tablets. Absolutely fine, you know? Now, listen, there was no reaction, violent or anything, but I was just slightly detached.
What, you felt that it was a warning sign?
Absolutely, yeah. So I'm just listening to the other people on the radio and thinking, I mean, they must get a heads up of some sign, of some sort, you know?
Mm.
So, look, I mean, you know, compared to some of them people, it wasn't that bad, but it was enough to say, look, get off the codeine, you know?
Okay.
And I haven't touched it since.
So what do you think? Should it be more warning? Should it be beyond prescription?
No, I would say no. I don't think it should be on prescription. I think people do need it. Maybe something... A bit more warning maybe on the leaflet, because I would read the leaflets before I took any of that stuff, you know. But it's just, as I say, it was just, and it's hard to describe, but it was, as I say, you weren't quite with it really, you know. And I'd love to give you a heads up, because it was weird, that's what it was. And as I say, the codeine, that's all it was the codeine. So I do wonder if some people have a heads up and they just keep taking it and ignore that type of sign.
Yeah, well, obviously they must.
Well, of course you do. I mean, I did.
Yeah.
I mean, you just put it down to, oh, you know, sure, any medication you take has a risk of a side effect, and your body will become accustomed to it and it'll pass. Do you know?
I would agree with you there, but I just as I said, the experience I had was, it was just, I wasn't quite there. Now, I wasn't stoned. I wasn't, as I say, staggering. I was sitting down, and it was only after the film, I just felt detached. You know,
I know the feeling you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. It's like a kind of, you're not inside your own body or something. It's a very strange experience. Yeah, well, you know, no, look, but it should be on prescription, I think.
Yeah, I mean, as Joe was saying there, though, I mean, geez, I mean, the doctors are there enough. If you add that onto it, I mean, look, yes, but I mean, next thing, alcohol's on prescription and cigarettes and everything, you know. I mean, where do you draw the line? I mean, the nanny state. You know, certainly there should be more warning, maybe, but prescriptions, it's very expensive. That's really
Doctors are busy enough as well, yeah.
I think the awareness is another issue, because most people won't read a leaflet anyway in medication. A lot of
pharmacists are, and it seems that most pharmacists do oblige. And do feel the obligation to tell you they are addictive. Is it for yourself? No more than 3 days. They do say it. Now, they can't.
The cigarettes and vapes, aren't we? And it doesn't go in. You need kind of, I think, Joe, a more kind of basic language, not medical language, not, you know, medicalising the issues.
Okay.
I think we need like an
information. Yeah, well, in fairness, smoking in young people is going down in Ireland. Thomas, good afternoon.
But they think, yeah.
Thomas,
how are you, Joe?
Good, how are you?
How are you doing? Not too bad, no, Joe.
You're on Salpidine at the minute. You feel you're addicted. A lot of people are on it, but they're fine. But
well,
you feel you're addicted.
I just listened to some of the people there that you know, that are listening, like, and talking about the whole situation, but I just kind of have to have 3 Salpidine in the morning before I start work.
Okay.
Like, I'm a cleaner, and it's just to face people in the morning that's what I have to take, you know. And I went to my doctor, and the doctor told me, you know, that I was asking him for a substitute to try and wean me, you know, off it. And he told me that, you know, what you should do now, he says, try and stay off them and go for a walk. But it's easier to go to a pharmacy instead of talking to your pharmacy now in future, like for €75, whatever it is.
And what happens, Thomas, if you don't have your 3 in the morning?
Oh, I'm a different person. Like, I just can't. Like, I feel kind of vulnerable, you know. I just feel kind of like rattling and all that sort of stuff, you know. And like, you know, I don't have confidence.
But I mean, Joe, the other thing is, I mean, some people feel they need a drink before they can face the day, you know.
There you go,
That's what I'm saying. If we keep going down, you know, doctors and that type of add-on cost, look, there's a certain amount of responsibility there we should have ourselves. As I say, when I got the that feeling in the cinema, you know.
Yeah, well, you were able to, but.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying everyone can, but
yeah,
I'm saying
they can't.
Not everyone can go to a doctor either and get a prescription.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. Thomas, you spoke to your GP.
Went to my GP, and I've just felt that, you know, I needed to talk to someone and see what the story was.
That's a great start. Fair play.
I am, because, like, when I was on Zolpidol, which I could get a lot of people now and again, they were even better, but I'll stick to the Zolpidine because it's easier to go to a pharmacy. And you can actually go to the pharmacies that you know that you can get it without getting the third degree.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to a shop there and you see a young woman behind the counter and you can answer the questions before she asks them and she'll know what you're talking about and you go, grand, thanks, bye. And even when I was going to Tipperary there a couple of months back, I was able to go into a shop there and, you know, you're kind of like talking to someone and you're asking for that and then they'll just give it to you because you're kind of in deep conversation with someone. And I was only using that as a tool, you know, to get them.
Yeah.
You know, and then you
had your few tricks and tips and...
Oh, you have your few tricks or you get the tricks because you're thinking ahead. I have to always think ahead. Like, the weekends is not too bad because I'm off the weekends. I can maybe take one. I'm okay, but... Come Monday, you know, you have to have your fix. And then you get fierce tired in the afternoon because you don't need them then because you kind of have your morning over with.
Yeah.
And then you're grand. But no, I won't be able to function. But I'd love to be able to get advice off someone on the show, like what you could do. I know people are saying cold turkey. It's very hard. Like, I smoked before and I gave them up and whatever. But
the best advice is what you're doing already. Go to your GP or... If you want, but always go to a medic. That's my point.
But you don't have like something that can kind of help you. You know, like if you're smoking, you have this thing and you're vapid and you're grand.
Yeah,
but
with
these, you know, Joe, it's just and the amount of people that say to me, Thomas, don't be, you know, going and taking them, you know, that sort of stuff, you know. But anyway, so look. Joe, that's my story.
Well, first of all, Thomas, you're great strength in talking here.
No problem.
And good energy in terms of going to your GP.
Yeah.
Don't give up. And mind yourself.
Thanks, mind yourself.
You're a good person. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe.
Thomas.
Thank you.
Thomas,
bye-bye.
Say, listening to, for example, to Elizabeth, who's in Cork. Elizabeth, your point, please.
Hi, Joe. I just wanted to say that I suffered from chronic back pain over last 8 or 9 years.
Okay.
And at various points, going to a pain specialist was prescribed things like Zolpidine, Zolpidol, Tramadol, Codopar, different medications. And I'd come home or I'd go to the chemist and I'd come home with a bag full of boxes, like multiples, you know, could have been 6 or 8 boxes of Zolpidine. This was based on the prescription. And I found on each of the occasions over the few years that I started taking those tablets, within taking the first tablet or two, I would find myself very sleepy, very tired. I would have low blood pressure anyway. And I had young kids at the time. And I just said, I fell asleep nearly at the kitchen table one day after it was Tramadol. And, you know, it was a Monday, we were doing homework or whatever. And I realized I can't take anything with codeine based or anything like that. So my point was, like, maybe a bit of responsibility on the prescriber that, you know, somebody tries the medication for a couple of days, you know, 2-3 days, see how they react. Because if you're in chronic pain and whatever, you know, nerve pain, whatever the pain might be, and you have a box or a bag full of tablets that are going to take the edge off it, you're going to keep taking them, you know, unless you might have the wherewithal to say, I don't feel right on this, so I'm going to stop it. Which is, you know, what I did. And, you know, I found other ways and exercise and swimming and, you know, lots of other ways to try and manage it and paracetamol, if I, you know, regularly if I'm really having trouble with it. But I just felt, you know, it could have gone the other way. I could have said, well, you know, I'll just push through this. It's making me sleep. If I'm asleep, I'm not feeling pain then, you know, or if I'm feeling, it just made me feel skittish and just not, I just didn't like it. So I said, this isn't for me. But I had paid for all those medications.
You seem to have an awful lot of tablets for starters.
Well, it wasn't at any one time. It was just 1 year it might have been Zolpidine. And, you know, then I knew I didn't take it. And then another visit it might have been trying something else. But I just knew, obviously, there's a line of tablets that, you know, with ingredients that I couldn't take.
Mm-hmm.
what my point was, I had paid for all the tablets as well. They all went to waste. I did bring them back to the pharmacy in due course and say, look, I can't take them, and they dispose of them. But I did feel, I mean, I could have spent 60 or 70 euro each, you know, on buying. I didn't know when I was handing over the prescription, I was buying a bulk load of tablets.
Yeah.
So it's just, and I know I'll question everything now, but it's just, you know, it's just a different responsibility in how things are being prescribed to people. And I know doctors are busy and they're overwhelmed and that, but when somebody is dealing with pain in particular, you just want it to be dulled somehow, but it's just doing it safely, you know, and maybe.
And how are you coping with your back pain now?
Well, I swim 3 times a week. I walk. I exercise. I get injections maybe twice a year. They seem to be helping, and I only really take something if I feel I really have to, because I don't want to have all those kind of things in my system. But I can imagine, you know, listening to the listeners today, it's so easy to, you know, go down the road of you know, I'll take this because it's been prescribed for me and it'll help. It's just a little bit of the personal responsibility and then the responsibility of a prescriber, I guess.
And as you
to
say,
make it safer for people.
Yeah, and as you say, you looked at your children, you said, hang on a minute, this is not going to work. In terms of, your reaction to the tablets in front of your children.
Well,
you have to be on your have your wits about you. You really do.
You do, because I couldn't be getting into a car and going on a school run or whatever with, you know, feeling woozy or anything like that. And it's just, you know, if somebody's been prescribed something they haven't been on before that has a, you know, addictive nature, then a small dose to see how the person goes, rather than being sent home with a box, you know, of a month's supply and, you know, then you're hooked.
Yeah, okay, well done, Elizabeth. Yeah. And kind regards to you and your family. That's Elizabeth in Cork. Back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mags Tiernan, and Mags is in Drogheda. Good afternoon, Mags.
Hi, yes. How are you?
Good. Your journey.
Yeah. So my sister messaged me to say that you were talking about it. Yeah. So I logged on here. So I was in my 30s when I started. Again, like a lot of people, went to the doctor with back pain.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how it felt for a while. And then after a while, I realized that physically, what made me realize, actually, it's a bit weird, but I heard Davina McCall talking one day, because obviously she's in recovery from heroin, and she mentioned, you know, how she was never sick of waking up in the mornings with and not being wet and not, you know, for having withdrawals. And that's when I realised that I was addicted, because I used to wake up every morning and I would have had withdrawals through the night, so I would have had severe night sweats and the whole lot. It led to other addictions for me. I'm over 3 years off codeine, but over 2.5 years now off all drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I swapped one for the other. I used to smoke some drugs to give me to calm me down if I didn't have codeine. And I personally think it should be prescription only. I don't think it should be able to be bought over the counter. I heard one gentleman talking there about how he was able to, you know, you can go in, you can fill the pharmacies. I think they should be stricter. I think, and there's no disrespect, but there's a lot of young girls who work in a pharmacy and they're brought up to be respectful for older people. But when so you're coming in, so I would have kind of preyed on that a little bit.
Okay.
Or I think an XL sheet, like, so if you are buying it, your name goes down and all pharmacies in the area can have a look at this sheet and see if you're a frequent buyer and talk to you with empathy and compassion and say, you know, I think maybe you have a problem, and I think they should be allowed to notify the GPs.
Yeah. Then you're into, I hate saying it again, GDPR stuff and who can see the information and are you labelling people and some people.
I do understand that, but, if you don't have a problem, then it shouldn't be a problem, is what I think. But I think for me, and I'll talk about myself personally, like if somebody had of maybe when it was first faced at me, and my family realized what I was going through, and they kind of stood and said, "You're addicted." And when I realized I had nowhere to hide anymore, that was the beginning of the rest of my life. I'm a much happier person now. The withdrawals is horrible. You need support going through the withdrawals. It's like, you know, it's an opiate. It's like coming off heroin. Yeah. I never want to put myself through that again. But there are supports out there for people as well. And I really want to say that there's fellowships, there's drug addiction services. I think there's a lot of stigma.
And the HSE Drugs and Alcohol, the helpline is free phone.
Oh, and they're amazing.
Great 1-800-459-459, our helpline at hse.ie, and that's open Monday to Friday from 9:30 to 5:30. But there are, especially now people have access to the internet, there's a lot more tools out there, isn't there, to help people.
Yeah, now I think in this country we could do a lot more detox beds. The way things happened for me, I kind of had to go through the detox on my own here, but they say that you have to show willing to get into a detox bed and a detox unit. And I know the ward in Beaumont is amazing and the stuff that they do is amazing, but you have to be shown willing. And I think sometimes somebody would get up today and think, I want to come off this. By the time they get into a bed and a detox unit, they could be dead.
Right.
I used to go to bed at night and I would be petrified. I wouldn't wake up the next morning.
Terrified.
Because I would have taken that much medication that day. Yeah. But I would still get up because the physical withdrawals was a lot scarier to me at the time than actually coming off everything and doing it that way. It's a horrible, horrible drug. I think so many people take it and they don't even realise they're addicted, and it's so easy accessible.
And as you say, you're off codeine for 3 years and off all drugs now for two.
Off everything 2.5 years,
Stay well going forward. Mags, that's Mags Tiernan and Drogheda. Thanks indeed. Apologies to those who couldn't get in. Paul Mernock is on sound. Research, Richard Byrne. Producer, Shanna Gorman. And Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.